Bonjour, bonsoir, and bienvenue, Canada. You're listening to MMA Canada Radio. I am Josh Oliveira. We survived a little bit of a technical snafu, but we're coming to you live just a couple minutes later than usual. Hope you hung in there. We had another action-packed, full show for you. So full, in fact, that I don't think we'll have a chance to touch on the Titan 16 event that happened just this past weekend. But if you can check out the video of Tim Sylvia eating it, I think most MMA fans will enjoy it. If you haven't seen it yet, you can probably find that at MMACanada.net. Is that not right, David?
Yeah, just hit up the video page. And there's not many videos that are online that you won't find on the video page there. That was it was kind of reminiscent of his fight with was it Mercer there?
Or Fedor, for that matter.
Brutal. The guy's got no one to stop. I think you should just stick to patrolling the beat, and as soon as you cross that 300-pound mark, you're a little out of shape for MMA.
Yeah, well, this is his latest line now. He's going to rededicate himself to 265 pounds, and he'll be back as an actual heavyweight, he says. So we'll see. I don't know. It was maybe an early stoppage, but at the same time, he didn't offer much in the way of offense, and definitely ate a few big shots from Abe Wagner there. But again, no time. One other thing I want to touch on before we get into too much Canadian MMA is just a little bit of a revision, a little bit of a editor's note from last week's show. You and I grossly underestimated the achievements of Mr. Travis Fulton.
Fultonator.
Said that he had less than...
Oh, the Fultonator, yeah.
Yeah, the Fultonator, yeah. The Fultonator. Said that he had less than 100 wins, in fact, closing in on 250. Now, how many of those wins are quality is another question, but nonetheless, we have to apologize to the Iron Man of MMA.
Yeah, and I think the quality is balanced out by the fact that how many of those wins took place where he was fighting 2-3 times a night. He's probably got more tournament victories than anyone, easily, hands down. Mass respects out to Travis Fulton. But Dan Severn, closing in on the century, 97 wins now after capturing the heavyweight title out at the Elite One Tapping Out show that took place in Moncton. Props out to Dan Severn.
Yeah, and as I predicted, sounds like it was a little bit of a tougher fight for him. Neither of us were there to see it. I would like to get the thoughts of our MMA Canada reporter who was there, Craig Wassing. But in any case, Severn managed to tap him via arm triangle, tap out Scott Frazier, former Elite One heavyweight champion, in the last second of the second round. So it took a little longer than Dan's usual night of work, but he still found a way to get it done. And as he said, locked up number 97.
Yeah, no, it's good to see him, still pulling out the victories, it's not many guys that are in that kind of shape when they're in their 50s and able to keep fighting, month in and month out. He's not a guy that fights, just a couple, three times a year. He's a seriously active fighter. Also on that card, though, they had the wrap-up of their featherweight tournament, and Justin Bourgeois beating Lyndon Whitlock there in the second round with a TKO to become the first other featherweight champion for Elite One. Nice to see the culmination of the tournament they had run coming out there with a good champion. And it really sounds like they're doing good things. There's not a lot happening in the maritime MMA scene right now, and Elite One's definitely the promotion that's carrying the torch right now for MMA in the Maritimes.
Yeah, like you say, not necessarily putting on the biggest fights. Actually, I saw Dan Severn with his belt, and it was looking a little substandard by belt, by comparison to some of the other belts out there. I don't know if you can find that picture online, but I wonder, do you expect Dan Severn to defend that heavyweight belt with them pretty frequently now that he has it? Because that could be a decent little draw out east there. Dan made regular appearances.
Well, it could be, right? But any time a guy gets parachuted into a title fight, I always question the wisdom in the promoter's decision to do that, because you know, they're not beholden to the promotion, even if there is a contract clause that they have to stay and defend the belt. You know, whereas if it's a fighter who's been through your organization, well, a perfect example was Ryan Jimmo when he turned down the light heavyweight title fight in the MFC against Glover Teixeira because he's like, hey, this guy's just parachuting in. You know, he hasn't done anything to earn it. Whereas now you've got, you know, Jimmo taking on Dwayne Lewis, and those are two guys that, you know, have more than earned their stripes in the MFC. So, I mean, whether Severn will be back to defend it, who knows? Maybe he likes the Maritimes and it's a nice holiday for him. Yeah, it's a risky thing for them to do, I think.
Yeah, well, in any case, Elite One, like you say, carrying a bit of the torch out there for East Coast MMA, and props to them for that. But we should probably, you know, before we get on to too much else, talk about the major MMA happening in Canada over the weekend. Of course, talking about Rec MMA, Strong and Proud from Gatineau, Quebec there, just outside of Ottawa. And, you know, even more specifically, Jordan Meehan coming up with the massive win in the main event over Joe Riggs, well-traveled, well-known Joe Riggs. And, you know, this was the type of fight that really put the guy on the map, right? I mean, beating a guy ranked that far ahead of you. And, I mean, did you get a chance to see the card at all?
Yeah, no, definitely. It was quite an enjoyable card. Yeah, Jordan, he looked tremendous. You know, just the confidence he carries himself with in the cage now as opposed to when he was younger and picking his shots, it just seemed that, you know, Riggs had no answer for his footwork. Jordan was moving well in and out, and finally Riggs was just resorting to looking for, you know, the one-punch knockout while Jordan picked him apart and eventually secured his own TKO. But, yeah, Jordan looked great. Young Guns is he's a hot commodity right now. It'll be interesting to see whether or not he'll get picked up by a larger promotion sometime in 2011. But if he keeps up this winning streak, I definitely think it's likely.
Yeah, no, and he's so young that even if he doesn't get picked up in 2011, even in, say, 2013, he'll only be 23, I think. So he's got time and clearly has talent. Like you say, just dominated Riggs from the get-go, and Riggs didn't seem to have answers. I mean, he put that jab right in Riggs' face from the start and kind of pawed it out there, and it just seemed from that moment on he really was more or less in control of the fight. I mean, Riggs had a takedown in the first round, but Meehan was able to sort of scramble out of it, it seemed, fairly easily. So it wasn't the type of thing where there was a lucky punch or anything of that nature. He really seemed to dominate.
Yeah, well, and I thought, you know, like Jordan said last week when we were talking to him on the show, the fight with Jason High was really an opportunity for him to go out there and work his ground and his grappling. And so, like you said, Riggs took him down, but boom, he's just right up there. Because, you know, unless you're a pretty top-notch wrestler, Jordan's he's a great grappler in his own right and can get himself out of those situations. I don't think there's any rush for him to move on to anything. As Lee, me and his father is really playing it smart and developing Jordan well. So now we can look forward to his fight, I guess, at the end of this month when he takes on Keto Allen, another standout wrestler from Calgary. It'll be nice being able to see Young Guns fight in just a few weeks from now, too.
Yeah, and I assume the kind of hometown crowd there in Lethbridge will still be riding high off this victory and probably, you know, give him quite the ovation possibly before the fight even starts.
One thing that I thought was a little surprising with the event, though, was, what was it, a total of 6 fighters missed weight for their fights?
Yeah, that's true, including Riggs.
Can you remember
it
then?
It's hard, you know, you don't want to be too critical, but at the same time, these guys are professional fighters, and the thing was, among the 6 who missed weight were 3 of the top fighters on the card. I mean, Caleb Starnes maybe took the fight on a little bit of short notice, but as far as Joe Riggs and Markel Wedderburn, I mean, Wedderburn again missing weight, so at this point, you have to wonder who in Canada really wants to sign him to fight, especially, you know, at that weight class. I don't know. What did you make of all the missed weight?
Well, Well, I mean, Caleb missing weight after reading that Diary of a Fighter entry that he wrote that we had on the site, and was talking about sort of being glued to a bar stool and not really working hard in the gym. I was really, impressed with the way he came out. And, I mean, the start of the fight with Matt McGrath was a little slow and whatnot, but, you know, I expected him to be a little weak that way. But, yeah, I mean, he fought a great fight, finally taking it to him and, you know, doing what he does best, and that's, you know, get a guy on the ground and put that black belt to use. And securing the submission. But yeah, just, you know, not to get away from the weight issues, you know, with Wedderburn, it's almost to be expected now, I guess, if he's coming to fight, that he'd show up overweight. And the headbutting incident with Mark Holst, where during the weigh-ins, you know, the face-off, guys will get in one another's faces, but apparently it was a butt, you know, a headbutt a bit of. And to me, that's just, that's classless. You know, you're about to fight a guy where, you know, anything goes that isn't dirty. You know, you save it till then. And any of this kind of shenanigans, I don't know. I just, no respect for that. And after the incident out at AFC where he bailed out of his fight there with Jason Haidt, you know, the debacle that happened at, what was it, maybe TFC 7 when he was fighting Ryan Ford. Yeah, just, you know, not behaving professionally. You know, talking way too much smack and not backing it up. So, poor showing there. What can you do? But the real highlight for me of the card was Dimitri Wardenberg and Remy Morvan. That was, you know, just such a great back-and-forth battle, you know, on the feet for the first round, on the ground for the second, then going back and forth in the third. Really enjoyed that. Those are a couple of young guys to really keep your eye on. I mean, Morvan, not the best record, but it's, you know, he's definitely an exciting fighter. What did you think of that fight?
Yeah, I thought it was quite an excellent fight. I remember watching it. I don't necessarily remember how I scored each round, but I do remember feeling that it was a very close back and forth fight. I believe I did score it for Wardenberg as it was happening. Again, I didn't go back and watch it a second time, but I did hear around, sort of on the internet, that a lot of people felt that it was kind of a blown decision, that it should have been for Morvan. Can you see where, you know, that's coming from, or did you feel that way?
Well, it all came down to the third round. I mean, clearly, Wardenberg took the first. The second round, Remy Morvan controlled him on the ground, you know, numerous submission attempts. And in the third, I think, in my opinion, I thought Wardenberg was getting the better of the strikes. And so, you know, edged out the third. So that being said, I would have scored the fight for him. But, you know, it was a really close fight. And so, you know, you're always going to have people that are a bit jaded and, oh, he should have won. You know, it's definitely one of those fights where it came down to one round, and that last round was very close, so it could have gone either way. You know, if Wardenberg had lost, well, then people would be saying he got robbed. So you're never in that kind of fight, you know, you're not going to be able to make everyone happy.
That was my feeling.
Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, just to touch on a couple other things, the Starnes and that post, the Diary of a Fighter post, it was tough to know quite what to make of that, but in fairness to him, from what I understand, he did put in a real concerted effort to make the weight and only missed by, I believe, less than a pound. So, you know, good on him for that, and it was a solid performance, maybe, you know, a little bit larger than Matt McGrath, a little probably, obviously, better on the ground, a little more experienced. So it wasn't the toughest fight for him, and I think that sort of resulted in a fight that was mainly one-sided, and the crowd maybe wasn't totally, you know, loving it the whole time. But I thought it was a solid performance by Starnes. He went out there and did what he needed to do. You say, what can be done about Wedderburn? Well, I think Holst maybe answered that question. You can hold on to the choke a little too long. What did you think of that, the rear naked choke that never ends for a bit there?
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen that applied on that individual three times over the past, I don't know, year or two. And it's just, you know, if you're a Muay Thai fighter, you know, you got to learn how to defend submissions at least, right? If you're not going to be applying them, at least know how to get out of them and don't stick your neck out there. And when you see a fighter doing it again and again and again and again, You got to wonder, like, is anyone coaching, or what's going on with the coaches? Are they not listening, or, you know? But yeah, it's an obvious one for anyone that's going to be getting in there with Showtime anytime. Rear naked choke. That's the game plan. Work for it. It'll work. yeah, it was great to see Mark Walsh go out on a high note like that. Definitely, he was the hometown hero, and the crowd mm-hmm. was behind him for his final fight. So yeah, you know, props to him for going out there and fighting a smart fight and not getting rushed in. And you know, Wedderburn fought good. He's controlling him a lot, pushing him against the cage, not being able yep. to get too much going, but using his strength well. If he develops his game, given that his strong stand-up skills, he could definitely be a good contender. But losing again and again the way he has, he's really got to develop that ground game before looking to move on.
I think it's safe to say a move to middleweight should be imminent at this point, I would think.
Who are you kidding, eh?
I don't know what else really to say about that. I think he should just really give it up at welterweight there and, see what else he can do at another division. And you're right, he did have his moments, especially early in the first round, kind of controlling the clinch there and a couple of leg kicks. So everyone knows Markel Wedderburn has talent, and no one's denying that. One more highlight on that card maybe before we move on. Robin Black, kind of a media personality as well as a fighter, seems to be done with MMA competitively now, losing to Michael Riley. It was a pretty close fight while it lasted. Robin Black, he was on top before being armbarred, so he had his moments. But I personally am impressed by what he managed to do. He had several fights, lost more than he won, but good on him, I say.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, props to anyone. I'm not one of these guys who's any guy who's got the nuts to get in there. Because to me, it's not about just getting in there to fight. So there's people that have fighting in mm-hmm. them, and there's people that don't. And there's no good or bad about that. That's why you have managers. That's why Dana White has never set foot in the octagon to fight. Why? Because he doesn't have it. So does that make him anything less? No. Full respect to Rob and for transitioning out of his music career, moving into MMA, taking it seriously, training his ass off, fighting, win or lose, coming back, and he's really made a great career for himself now that he's on TV and all over with the Fight Network and full props to him. Robin's a really great guy and it's great to have him in the MMA community. But it's kind of an interesting thing with the show having Patrick Cote commentating on the show, which I had never heard before. Him doing English play-by-play. What was your take on that?
I thought he did a pretty solid job. I thought his English, it was, decent. He's obviously come a long way with it. His insights were great. I thought he did a pretty top-notch job. I would definitely look forward to his commentary again. If that's going to be the norm with Rec MMA, I'm not sure. Maybe we can ask him about it, but I enjoyed that, obviously, and hearing his comments on Caleb Starnes and then the fact that Caleb wasn't getting advice from his corner was a bit amusing. So he definitely had some highlight moments as well.
Yeah, well, that turned out rather well, having him being able to come into the cage right after with Caleb winning, because it really sets up their fight nicely for ringside when they headline ringside 10 in April, which they just had the big press conference for yesterday in Montreal with mm-hmm. Eric Champoux, the president of ringside MMA there. Looks like, and you can actually catch his interview with Gary Whitaker on the Weigh-In Show on the video page of MMACanada.net. Exciting to see MMA coming back in Quebec, after the demise of TKO, and then we thought, XMMA was going to be coming around, and then the police, in a big mm-hmm. mob raid arresting, mm-hmm. the guys running it. A provincial sting. You had to wonder what was going to happen, and then fighters having and still having issues with licensing. You know, it's good to see that people are there and doing it right. So yeah, props to them for that. And it's going to be an exciting fight, I think, Caleb and Patrick. I think, you know, either one's got a shot. If it goes to the ground, Caleb's got an advantage, I think. But if it stays on the feet, I think Patrick's got the best shot.
Yeah, and at the same time, both well-rounded and experienced. So it's just a real top-quality fight. And I think you're right, the ringside is positioning themselves to maybe carry that mantle of the number one promotion in Quebec. We'll see if they can hold on to it for long, but they seem to be positioning themselves for it. Maybe just some other Canadian MMA news to cover. A bit of a slow week, but one thing that stood out for me was this Jones Entertainment Group, from what I understand, getting their Ontario MMA license maybe first, also with three events already scheduled. I understand they're boxing promoters. Do you know much about this outfit, and do you expect that they'll promote MMA as kind of you know, a regional event, or do you think they're going to go after some of the bigger names?
Yeah, well, right now, they haven't said anything as to what they're going to do. It's, yeah, just kind of up in the air. We don't know, is it going to be a regional show? Are they going to bring in big names? They say they're going to, bring in big names, but, yeah, we don't know. They're being very very slow to give details, these new promotions coming out of Ontario, the Knocked Out Entertainment Canada and Jones Entertainment. You know, they're saying they're putting on shows, but, you know, who's fighting? You know, we don't know anything. And that's where it's very much going to be Wild Wild West this year in Ontario, because, yeah, we just don't know what any of these people are going to do. Are they going to do more than one show and disappear? Are they going to stick around?
It would seem like maybe the first few shows, it almost doesn't matter too much. Like, maybe you need a recognizable name in the main event if you can find one. But just the novelty factor of seeing live MMA in places like London, Ontario, at the John Labatt Center on May 19th, where Jones Entertainment is going to promote, I think they're calling it MMA Live. But anyway, in London, just maybe the novelty factor of live MMA being there at all will kind of fill the seats. Or it seems like that's what they're counting on anyway.
Yeah, I mean, well, and it's weird. I mean, starting in London, where they're based out of. Ooh, we've got the Predator on the line.
We're just getting word that we're being joined by our guest this evening, Patrick the Predator Cote. Patrick, are you there?
How you doing, guys?
Not too bad.
Hey, doing excellent. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing, guys?
Doing very well. So Patrick, many fans obviously remember you from your early days fighting with TKO and your early UFC fights. You know, don't need to go into all of that too much. Obviously, you were then on The Ultimate Fighter 4 and had that excellent title run where you blasted through a few very talented contenders in the UFC. But probably the last big fight that people remember you from was your title fight with Anderson Silva. Obviously, in the third round, you succumbed to a bit of a knee injury there. You know, maybe just for fans who haven't, you know, followed you too much since then, what was the extent of the knee injury? How bad was it? You know, what exactly happened there?
That was pretty bad. You know, in the second round, I felt my knee pop, and I was able to finish the second round. In the third round, I knew that my knee was done, and you know, in the third round, when I put all my weight on my knee, dislocated, and everything broke. You know, both meniscus, both ACL, MCL, or cartilage. So I had two big reconstruction on my right knee, but right now it's 100%, so it's all good now.
It is a major injury, though. I mean, a lot of people, especially before the science was so much so advanced, but that could be almost a career ending. How long was it before you were able to train again? I guess that fight happened in kind of late 2008. Were you training before mid 2009, or how long did that take?
It took me maybe you know, close to 8 months to be able to train really hard for you know, training like boxing and jiu-jitsu, something like that. It took me a little bit more than a year and a half to going back in the octagon in the real fight.
Okay, and obviously fans certainly felt for you. We could see you still wanted to fight, and you know, it was obvious that your knee was finished. So I'm sure you got a lot of support from your fans in that time off there.
Oh, for sure. And I received a lot of support from my fans, from my my family, my friends. And, you know, I knew it. I wanted to come back. It's just that was a big, big injury. I had, you know, my doctor is the best in Canada. He did an awesome job. And, you know, he was able to put me back on my feet and be 100% again.
And am I wrong that you suffered another kind of separate, unrelated injury during your recovery that kind of delayed your return a little longer? What was the story there?
Yeah, that was the same knee. The first surgery didn't go very well, and after that, he put two ligaments instead of one, and now it's solid like a rock now. So no problem with that.
Okay, well, that's great to hear that your knee is working again. That's very important. Okay, but just recently, over last year, you fought twice in the UFC in a space of 5 months. Now, that's pretty close together for a pair of fights. And in neither of those fights did you look, you know, quite up to the standard we expect from you. Do you have a thought on maybe was it some ring rust to start or a thought on what exactly kind of went wrong in your last two UFC appearances?
When I fought Alan Belcher, for sure I had a slow start, but I felt good. You know, I was in really good shape, and you know, I had a slow start. It took me maybe you know, a minute and a half to be very comfortable in the fight. But after that, I was able to, you know, to follow the pace, and you know, as soon as I turned the switch on, you know, I took him down, and you know, I was able to, you know, on the ground, I had the advantage on the ground. I passed his guard very easy. You know, I was able to grab the kimura. I almost finished the fight with this submission, but I did a little mistake. And in the second round, you know, I was winning the stand up war. The stand up exchange was on my side, you know. I felt pretty good. I started to find my range, and you know, until he did the head stomp, you know, the fight was mine, and you know, I felt pretty good. In my last fight against Tom Lawler, I didn't do what I wanted to do. I hurt my back 2 days before the fight, but you know, I shouldn't fight. You know, if I had to do it again, probably I'll cancel the fight, but you know, I think the warrior thought go over me, and you know, I went to the fight, and I was wishing that the best happened, but it didn't happen.
Right.
Is there a lot of pressure on you when you're in that situation where, you know, 2 days out from a fight, you sustain an injury, and you know, you're thinking it would be, you're not 100%. You know, you're not 100%, but you're you know, about to you know, fight on a big show. It was, you know, UFC 121. You know, is that the pressure that drives you to really get out there?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I knew it, and I was two loss in a row with my title fight. I lost because of the injury, so I knew it, then another loss probably put me out in the UFC. But at the same time, that was 2 days before the fight, and, you know, we tried to stretch, we tried some good massage, and, you know, it didn't do anything. But I went to the fight. I felt okay in the first round, but the second and third round, I couldn't feel my leg at all. I just, you know, dislocated a little bit, a little disc on my back. Now it's okay, but that was just bad luck. That's it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like go ahead, David.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, your body's been banged up, you know, a little bit between the back, the knee. Right now, though, you're feeling 100% good to go, though, eh?
Yeah, finally. You know, it's been a long time. I'm going to start in training camp and fight and train for a fight 100% healthy. Feel good. I'm happy. And, you know, I wish it's going to stay like that. But right now, I don't know what I can fix now, because everything is fixed. I went to the hospital for the last 2 years, my both knees, elbows, and, you know, everything is fixed. So I think I'm good to go now.
You're bionic.
The bionic man. Obviously, it sounds like the injuries were part of the trouble. But, you know, getting released by the UFC may have given you a chance to reassess a bit about your training. I understand you're splitting time between a couple different gyms in Canada now. Is that a new thing for you? And where are you training exactly?
No, I always train in the same place. I train with BTT Canada under Fabio Holanda. And this is my main gym, my main team. I train with Howard Grant, my boxing, with Crew Ash. This is one of my new guy in my team, but he's awesome. This is my Muay Thai coach. Muay Thai coach is the best Muay Thai coach in Montreal. You know, he's the best secret in Montreal. Everybody now wants to train with him. He's really, really good. And I train with the Montreal Wrestling Club too. And, no, I always do that. And, right now for this fight, I'll probably go to the Hayabusa Training Center, training with Luke Harris and some good guy there. I'm going to try to change the routine a little bit. Maybe I'm going to go to Boston this time too, but not sure yet. But for sure, I'm going to just spend time to intern with those guys at the Hayabusa Training Center.
Okay.
Now what draws you out to come train in Edmonton? That's, you know, it's not something I hear often.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, there's a lot of good guys there, especially at the Hayabusa Training Center. I know those guys. Luke Harris is, you know, he was this close to make the UFC, but he had a big knee injuries. But now he's ready to go, and he's really good judo guy, good jiu-jitsu guy. There's a good wrestler there, too. So, you know, I'm going to go there probably in my training camp.
Yeah, no, for sure. I've had a chance to go out there and see, like when you mentioned wrestling, Roger Alves. You know, he's a great wrestling coach out there. And yeah, Hayabusa's definitely got a sound center. What was it, Luke Harris's last fight? He won by inverted triangle. You know, how many guys sink in an inverted triangle to finish a fight? Eh?
I don't think you think about it, but if you know the technique, if it happens, you have the reflex to do it.
Yeah. So you guys had the big press conference yesterday with Eric Shampoo, Ringside 10 coming up in April. You're about to take on Caleb Starnes. It was kind of interesting this past weekend watching the Rec MMA broadcast and hearing you do the commentary in English, which I was surprised when I was sitting there and I'm like, that's Patrick. And then, you know, and then you're able to actually get in there with Caleb after he won his fight and, you know, have a bit of a chat. How was that for you?
That was good. I saw exactly what I was expecting. You know, he didn't show me anything new than I wasn't expected. And, you know, I'm going to start my training camp and with this fight in my head. And, you know, I knew it then. He was this kind of fighter, and, you know, that's going to be no surprise for me.
So watching him, I mean, when you're watching him fight, and I guess it's quite lucky to be able to sit there, you know, right outside the cage and see your opponents fight right before you face him. But he didn't show you anything that, you know, you're like, I really got to watch out for this or that, or do you see somewhere where, you know, he has opportunity? Or do you think this is a fight that, you know, you feel you've totally got?
You know, in my mind, you know, I'm going to win this fight, no problem. But you know what? It's a fight. You know, you can be favorite on paper by million, but when the ring bell, it's 50-50. And this, I know, you know, his stand-up is pretty bad. But, you know, he has some okay wrestling, and his ground game is good, but he's good on his back. When he's on top, he's not that good. So I have to be careful about that. But, you know, I can't see him take me down. You know, if you think I'm easy to take down, if you saw my last fight against Tom Lawler, you know, it's going to be a big mistake. You know, you better watch my fight against Ricardo Almeida, and that's exactly this kind of fight I'm going to be this night.
Maybe while we're still on the topic of Rec MMA, Patrick, just before we get off it completely, I was wondering, how did you enjoy the commentating? Is it something you've done before? Because we were talking before, and we didn't remember another time you had done it. Is it something you enjoy and want to do again?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I made a long-term deal with the Score, the broadcast store, the Score. And, yeah, for sure. I do that for the UFC in French. I do that here in Quebec in French for you know, local TV TV broadcasts. I did that in English once here in Montreal here, but doing that in English full time, that was one of the premiere, and you know, I enjoy it a lot. And I think they enjoy it a lot too, the score channel, and they want me to do more things, more shows. So it's good.
Okay, that's great. We'll definitely look forward to that. Yeah, I didn't realize you'd signed a deal there. And maybe just finally on the rec topic, what did you think of Jordan Mean's performance in the main event there? Were you surprised? Did you expect that from him?
I wasn't surprised, but I was impressed. You know, 21 years old, he has 26 fights under his belt, and man, he fought a veteran. He fought eight veteran of UFC, 8-time, a 7-time Strikeforce veteran too. And you know, Joe Riggs is no joke. He has a really good hand, heavy hands, but man, he played with him. That was a pure beating. It's in the first round. He almost won the first round 10-8, and the second round he knocked him out with a nice big overhand, right overhand. And man, 21 years old, this guy is the future. Jordan Mean is probably the future of the Canadian MMA scene, probably.
Yeah, I think.
Well, now have you run across Rory McDonald training out in Montreal? Because I understand he's out there.
Yeah, we box at the same place at the Over Grand Gym, and yeah, this kid is really good too. Good boxing, good attitude, and you know, he's probably one of the guys who's the future too. But you know, he's gonna have a big challenge in front of him in Nick Diaz in Toronto. So it's gonna be interesting what's gonna be the end of this fight.
Yeah. So we'll move on from Rec MMA, but over to the ringside. Now, ringside, they're stepping into sort of a void in Quebec. You know, after TKO went down, XMMA went down, ringside's really sort of risen to be the lead promotion. Now going into the Bell Centre, your stomping grounds. You know, how come you decided, is that why you decided to go with ringside? Is because they are becoming such a prominent promotion in Quebec?
You know what? Since the beginning, they showed me a lot of respect, you know, like by humanship and, you know, with money too. But the thing is, it's good to fight here. We had the same interest. They needed me to go to the Bell Center and to be bigger. And, you know, for me, just sign two fight deal with an organization like that, it's gonna help me to go back in the big show. They know that I want to go back in the UFC, and they're okay with that. And you know, we know exactly where we're going in the future.
And I guess that just works out, being able to be clear that, you know, your ambition is to be back in the big show and being able to sign a two fight deal and not be locked in. I guess that must have been a huge, you know, deciding factor for being able to sign with them.
Yeah, for sure. That's why it took so long to the negotiation. I knew it, and I wanted to go there, but you know, in the contract there was a certain term, and it wasn't worth for us. But finally, at the end of the day, we signed, and we are happy with this deal.
Nice. And so, how does it feel to be going up on the big marquee? Because I mean, that card is stacked. The three title fights. And then you and Caleb in the main event. Does it feel good to be headlining, you know, the biggest local card in quite some time?
Yeah, for sure. I've been the main event, I think, 3 or 4 times here in Quebec. And, you know, it's good. The crowd here, it's good. It's very, very loud. And, you know, Eric Champoux expects maybe 4,000 people who come for his show, but I think it's going to be a lot more than that. You know, the card is awesome. 2 UFC veterans in the main event and 3 title fights. I think it's going to be a crazy night.
Yeah, I think probably will be just about the biggest card we've seen in Canada in some time, outside of the MFC anyway. It should be right up there. And like David was saying, ringside seems to be really stepping up with this card. Do you expect more and bigger cards from them in the future of this type? Because this seems like a big step up for them.
Yeah, for sure. And it's only the 10 show they do. They are already in at the Bell Center. So, yeah, you know, Ringside has a great future. And, you know, they have a really good fighter with them. And you know what? I think the main event like that, me against Starr, is going to give them a lot of exposure. And now everybody knows that Ringside exists and it's going to be bigger and bigger every year.
Well, we look forward to seeing you and Ringside rise together through 2011, Patrick. We appreciate your time and wish you the best of luck, man. Exciting fight April 9th at the Bell Center.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Patrick.
Okay. Have a good night. Nice. Yeah, it's going to be a huge card. I almost wonder how they're going to try and follow it up. You know, three title fights and Cote in the main event. It's going to be nice. It's going to be a big night.
And I agree. I agree with you, I think, and with Patrick. 4,000, I've heard 5,000 is expected at the Bell Center, but unless they've configured it for a 5,000 seat max, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they went well beyond that. I mean, obviously, Patrick is a major draw in the area, and then I know we've belabored this point, but the title fights and again, Caleb Starnes returning to Montreal, where, you know, it's like they say in promotion, whether they love you or hate you isn't the issue, as long as they care about you. And I think there are a lot of people in Quebec who care to some extent about Caleb Starnes, you know, insofar as maybe they want to see him lose there in particular. But in any case, I wouldn't be surprised if they pushed a lot of tickets for this event. Do you feel the same?
Well, that's almost the beauty of picking Caleb to come in there, you know, besides being, you know, a worthy and respectable opponent. But it's just that name cachet from UFC 83, you know, he's known there. It's he's not an unknown commodity, whether it's positive or negative, doesn't matter. People care. And having Patrick come back to fighting in Montreal, and like you said, where he's headlined when he was fighting with TKO and everything, yeah, it's a great little mix there to put those two together. And it was, you know, just the fact that Patrick was commentating when Caleb won the fight right before going into it and could go into the cage and sort of challenge him. It's a nice build up. And Eric Champeau, you know, he's doing things right. Like, they had their press conference yesterday, so 2 months out, they're starting to build the hype already, 'cause he knows he's got a lot of tickets to sell. Given that there's nothing going on MMA-wise around that time, it doesn't seem unreasonable that he could put 4,000 people in the Bell Center. Definitely.
I'm thinking 5,000 at least. Anyways, we'll see. We'll see how it goes, and maybe what the price of those he's looking for. But I can't imagine it'd be very much for the cheaper seats. Anyway, okay. Well, you know, it was great talking to Patrick. We hope, like he says, that the real Predator is back for this upcoming fight. You know, a win or loss, we just like to see him performing, you know, at the height of his abilities, because it has been a while. The Belcher fight, as he said, he took that kind of head stomp, and maybe he was winning before then. But personally, I thought he looked quite a bit out of his game against Lawler. So it would be great to see him, you know, performing at the top of his game again. Well, speaking of the UFC, we have a bit of a UFC card this weekend, UFC 126, and I think we're going to do a bit of a preview, but should we go for a quick commercial break first?
I say screw it. I say we just cut through. Just roll.
You want to just roll right on, eh? All right. Sounds good to me. Well, it's the Super Bowl card, right? We, as UFC fans, have come to expect a major card to coincide with the Super Bowl. It's something that the UFC is making a real point of doing. And I think they've been quite successful this year. Just the top three fights alone, I think, would sell just about any card, but then on top of that, you have some real noteworthy undercard fights, with preliminary fights. Mendez or Magala jumps out to me, but you know, before we get too into it, what do you feel the entire card? You know, how do you feel it's going to stack up in UFC history? Is this a mega card for the Super Bowl weekend? Do you feel?
Oh, I mean, I don't see how this card cannot be considered a mega card. Like, 2 months ago, I had friends start asking me, hey, you want to fly down for the fights? You want to fly down? And I know a number of guys who've flown down for this. You've got everything. You've got, you know, the best fighter in the world against a guy who was the best fighter in the world at one point in his career and is, you know, surging back nicely. You've got two of the brightest young prospects in MMA in the form of Bader and Jones. Two solid fighters with Franklin and Griffin going at it. You know, that's a very equal fight. You know, Miguel Torres, you know, at one point was the top dog. His weight on the card.
Bantamweight. And if I'm not mistaken, this is the first pay-per-view bantamweight fight on a main card in the UFC. I think that's correct. And so that's kind of a big deal for the 135ers.
Good call. Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, and then for, you know, Japanophiles, having Omagawa and Yamamoto on the card. This is huge with them making their debuts together. It's a fantastic card. You know, it just covers so many different angles that I don't see how a fan couldn't love this. And it definitely has potential to go down as, you know, one of the best of the year. We'll see what lies ahead. But, yeah, I'm uber excited.
And it looks like quite a good Super Bowl as well, just again before we get into the individual fights real quick. But it should be quite an excellent Super Bowl, I think, down in Dallas and that massive arena, mega arena they have down there, or whatever that monstrosity, you know, is called. We'll have Green Bay and Pittsburgh, a couple of top-quality teams picked, you know, early on. Obviously, Pittsburgh struggled early in the season, but, you know, should be a close game and should just be an overall great weekend for sports fans.
Yeah, no, people are pretty excited about the Super Bowl. I almost forget it's going on, getting so isolated in the world of MMA. But, yeah, no, it's a big weekend, especially if you're down in Vegas or whatever, or you're, you know, a little affluent and you're going to the fight Saturday night and then head to the game Sunday, just a road trip at one spot to the next. But, yeah, no, it's a big weekend, going to be awesome. So let's dip into the card here. Let's even start at the top. What are you thinking? Anderson Silva against Vitor. Definitely Anderson's getting the line, coming in at -250. But do you think his odds are really that good going into this?
I think they're probably close to where they're at. I don't mind bets on Vitor at +190 for an underdog. You know, obviously has a great deal of power in his strikes, and you know has been around the block enough times that he's not going to be, intimidated by Anderson Silva, or I don't think mystified by his striking ability. I think he'll be prepared for it. But at the same time, I do look for Anderson, especially if the fight remains on the feet, to use his reach in particular. And also, you know, Vitor, he'll probably come out strong, but he's not known necessarily for fighting consistently. So we're not sure what to look for from him at all or from one round to the next. So with Anderson's history of dominance outside of the Sun fight, it's hard to overlook that. It's hard to think that, when a guy's been winning this long, it's hard to think he'll ever lose. But I don't necessarily feel great about Vitor's chances. I don't know. How do you look at this fight?
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, you know, Silva's just got too many weapons. You know, he knows how to adjust to people, you know, the way he can go between orthodox and southpaw, depending how he is suited. You know, and it doesn't change his effectiveness. He can still put a guy away either way. Even if he's backpedaling, he can knock a guy out for Forrest Griffin. You know, and so I think if this fight goes a bit longer, like you say, Vitor, who knows where his conditioning's at. He's got more muscle mass, and he's definitely the more explosive of the two. You know,
also
has
fought in some
hands.
Time, right? So we could be concerned about ring rust there from Belfort as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I like the fact that Silva's been sort of laying it low. You know, you haven't heard or seen a lot from him going into this. Which, you know, says focus to me when guys are avoiding the bombastic media spotlight before their fights. But, you know, Vitor, he's got the legendary hands. You know, how many highlight reel knockouts has the guy got? So he's got that opportunity, but I mean, when you're going in against, in my opinion, you know, the best fighter around right now, you're a fool to bet against him. You know, the guy's what 12 UFC victories he's got, you know, seven, this will be his eighth defense of the title. You know, and after the comeback against Sonnen, he's been in deep, deep waters, you know, I come back to tell the tale. So, I like Silva in this, you know, let's give him a little legs, maybe third round. He finishes things. Yeah, why not? Your thoughts, who do you think?
Yeah, just to close out, I do think Anderson probably will finish the fight at some point. As you said, he's on, I believe, his seventh going on eighth consecutive title defense, which is by far a UFC record, and to do it in the modern era. I mean, obviously, well, here we go. The only thing you could compare it to would be George St. Pierre's dominance. Does Anderson need to win and win impressively to remain your, anyway, pound-for-pound number one fighter? Or would any win, kind of given his history of success so far, would any win keep him sort of atop the mountain for you? Or are you really looking for a finish of the Spider?
Well, when you get into that, you know, that cream of the crop and dealing with, you know, thousandths of a second, like, you know, GSP's better, Anderson Silva's better, you know, they're both the best at what they do. You know, they're very different fighters, and they couldn't really, I mean, they could fight if we want to have an open weight fight, but trying to find a weight for them is a little silly because George is a smaller guy. Anderson walks around at 220 pounds. Are you kidding me? George is at like 180, 185. So it's just, yeah, that's, I mean, if you want to have an open weight fight and see who wins, but people don't like that stuff anymore. You couldn't get it sanctioned.
More I'm thinking about that fight, I want to see it at 177.5 pounds, right in between welterweight and middleweight myself. I have a hard time getting excited for GSP and Anderson at middleweight, and I don't think GSP is overly interested in moving up to middleweight. He said that once he moves, he wants to stay there, so... I actually, the more I think about it, I like that at a median catch weight. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a kind of a shame, though. It's not often that they do, like, sort of just this random marquee matchup where, you know, say they'll meet at 180 because these guys are always defending their belts. You know, there's contenders constantly emerging. And I don't know if they're at the same point in their career. Like, Anderson's winding down. He's at the last few fights of his contract. Probably doesn't want to renew. I don't get that impression. And so, you know, it's just the timing might work out. But, I mean, if you go to, I just think losing the weight, Anderson becomes disadvantaged. And if it's too high, then George is disadvantaged. And I just don't know if there is a sweet spot for it as much as we all want it. But if they can make it happen and, you know, Dana White snaps his fingers, then it would be great. One subtext that I do like about this card, though, is fighting right before Silva and Vitor is Rich Franklin and Forrest Griffin. Forrest Griffin of the aforementioned humiliation. And Rich Franklin of the twice beaten down by the most vicious plum and knees from Anderson Silva, whereby he has a new nose.
Forrest of the No Moss moment, waving off the fight, and Rich Franklin of, as you say, the crooked nose. So two of the, you know, more highlight, embarrassing moments in UFC history. And with those guys, obviously, they're more than that. But it is an interesting subtext, two of Anderson Silva's more standout kind of victims, fighting one another.
I mean, going into this fight, it'll be interesting to see, you know, I mean, we haven't seen Forrest for a while. Where is he at? You know, Rich moving up in weight, fighting at 205, trying to revive his career simply because Anderson Silva exists at 185. It's going to be quite an interesting fight. I mean, I think if Forrest comes back and there's not too much ring rust and he can use, you know, those beautiful leg kicks and use a fast pace the way he did when he was fighting Rampage, you know, we can definitely see a nice decision going his way. You know, there's always the puncher's chance of the finish, like we saw when Franklin fought Vitor. But they're both tough, wily guys, and I see this one going the distance and Franklin walking away with a decision.
You like
how
Franklin?
Do you think that'll play out?
I actually, obviously, people are going both ways on this fight. It's fairly close. The odds makers have it fairly close. But personally, I like Rich Franklin a great deal. Forrest, as you said, has spent some time off. He's also said that he feels quite nervous about this fight. I'm not. When I hear him interviews, I don't feel that he has that kind of hunger, that fire that he had maybe, as you say, when he was fighting for the title for the first time against Rampage. That was, I think, a different Forrest. It was a Forrest who, you know, really felt the need to push himself, to get that chip off his shoulder. I feel like maybe the chip's not there anymore, and I'm just not feeling the same desire from Forrest. That may be a bit of an emotional breakdown of it, but it just seems that way. And Rich, by contrast, even though he's a little older or a little more experienced probably, I do get the sense from him that he wants that one more shot in the limelight, and he is a little faster. Griffin has that size and the leg kicks, but I think Franklin, coming from Southpaw, which Griffin has also said that he doesn't enjoy fighting against, and then with his ability to create angles, I think that Rich is going to land more shots. He's gonna find the openings and even embarrass Griffin a little bit once again. I could be, going too far out on a limb, but I feel pretty confident with a Franklin pick here.
Franklin embarrassment. I like it. Nice. Okay, so we agree to disagree. Bader and Jones, the battle of the wonder kind. Wow, this mm-hmm. is possibly one of the most exciting matchups of the year, at least on paper going into it. Who do you like?
Yeah, no, it is a very exciting fight for the light heavyweight division. Either of these fighters with an impressive win could easily contend for the title, although I think Dana White has made clear that he intends to promote Rampage against the winner of Shogun versus Evans, which is fair enough. I mean, in either case, in either outcome, that's a great, very promotable fight against Rampage. So, but in any case, it's a big fight. Obviously, as you say, a couple of wunderkinds here, real young guys. Both should be undefeated. Bader at 12-0, John Jones at 11-1, but really should be 12-0 as well. We all know that loss to Hamill was no kind of a loss at all. As for what I expect, though, I think you're going to see John Jones just continuing to roll here. I think Bader will put him in some trouble early, may get him down at some point, but John Jones is not weak in the wrestling department by any means. And that reach, Bader referenced, the longest reach in the UFC, and John Jones knows how to use it. We've seen that. He uses it in orthodox and unorthodox ways, and you can't really game plan for him. I see another domination for John Jones here. I don't know. Do you think that do you think Bader can pull it off, or do you think it's a fair amount closer than I see it?
Yeah, I mean, it's by no means a lock, right? I mean, Bader's talented. He's unbeaten. He's kind of like, if Tito could strike. He's a guy with that kind of wrestling, although we don't see him use it, because like when he fought Antonio Rogério Nogueira, he outboxed him, which mm-hmm. really is impressive. Against mm-hmm. a guy who's competed, for his country in boxing. And so to see him go to that level, and I guess the question is he going to do that with Jones? Because I think most of us would agree that, Jones we can't even describe what he's doing, right? The angles that he comes at people, he's the next big thing. And I don't know when or how he's going to do it. But I think he'll finish this fight with something that I wasn't expecting, because that's what I've come to expect of him. His last three fights have just been vicious. His only loss was for being too vicious.
There's been a pattern lately with John Jones. He likes to take people down and do a bit of the Tito Ortiz, it seems. He likes to throw elbows from guard and just devastating ones as well, obviously cracked Vera's skull in half. This seems to be, if there's any order of madness, it seems to be his main weapon, elbows from guard.
And on the feet, if they stay there, I mean, Bader, he's a sound striker, so it wouldn't surprise me if he's able to land something that allows him then to pounce and earn a TKO. But we haven't seen that happen, and until that does, I just don't see it happening at this point. But
the lines on Bader are pretty pretty cheery. If you think there's even a chance at plus 250, 2.5 times your money to bet on Bader. So that's, you know,
yeah, there's money.
Money to be made pull off that wonder strike. Maybe even a bet on Bader to win, and then maybe a parlay of a couple of the favorites, and then either way, maybe in that fight, you could get paid. That would be nice. Okay, well, moving down the card, we have Miguel Torres, obviously former WEC bantamweight champion. He had a bit of a rough patch, but now, with Team Jackson looking better since his last fight, taking on a stalwart of the bantamweight division in Antonio Banuelos, and good for him, Banuelos, for putting himself in a position to be in a big fight like this on a pay-per-view card, and the first bantamweight fight on a pay-per-view card that I'm aware of. What do you think here? Is this just basically a showcase for Torres at this point, or, you know, are we still concerned about where he's at?
Well, I mean, I don't think at this level, you know, there are the showcase fights. You know, there's not too often you're going to see a soup can fight, so to speak, because, you know, any guy who gets in there is game. But Torres, it wasn't long ago that he was the Don, and he really seems to have rededicated himself and gotten more serious about listening to people outside his inner circle, and has reached out to people to teach him new things, and has realized that he has to grow that way. And I think the line on this fight reflects that. I mean, I like Ryan Bader at 250 a lot better than I like Banuelos at plus 300. But, you know, Torres going in at minus 500, I think a lot of people are sensing a resurgence in him. And, you know, it's sort of something similar to what Uriah Faber's trying to do. And time will tell which one turns out to be the more legitimate. I think Miguel is definitely the one favored to take this one.
And Faber and Torres now in the same division would seem to be on a collision course. It seems to be a fight, that just naturally that a lot of people would want to see. They were obviously both heavily promoted around the same time in the WEC. Dominic Cruz, the current bantamweight champion, I believe his hand is injured. Could we see maybe a number one contenders fight with Faber and Torres if they both win kind of their upcoming fights? Do you think that's likely?
Well, and I could see that being the first co-main event of a pay-per-view with the little guys up there, right? You know, because they're both names. Miguel's done a lot of TV with ESPN's MMA Live show, so he's well-known, as well as Bobby Rizak's Legalized MMA movie. Him and Faber, that would be fabulous. That's sort of a fight for the ages. I can't even imagine the way those two would go at each other. This could definitely set that up. And they're definitely in need of building contenders in these lighter weight classes because they're somewhat thin on that, which will change with time. They're brand new. But, right now they need to build marquee fights, and that would be a great one, I think. Finishing off the pay-per-view, or starting it off as it will be on Saturday night, we got Jake Ellenberger against Carlos Eduardo Roja. Roja coming in here, he's known for the subs, hasn't lost, but Ellenberger, I mean, he's a grinder, sort of a John Fitch 2.0. And twice was set to face Fitch, but never got to. What do you think? What do you think of Ellenberger going into this against Roja?
I do like Ellenberger, but I do see this fight as a fair amount closer than the odds makers seem to. Ellenberger, obviously, the split decision loss to Condit, but besides that, looking just pretty solid in the UFC, a solid win there over Pyle and Mike Pyle, that is, and over John Howard. He is looking strong. Obviously, was set to fight John Fitch, as you said, before Fitch got the call up to the main event in Australia against BJ Penn there, just at the next UFC. So yeah, no, he has distinguished himself and deserves to be a favorite. But let's not overlook Roja too much here. Is undefeated. A nice first round knee bar submission in his UFC debut. Not over an overly credible opponent, but a guy like that can kind of finish the fight at any time. And I do like bets on Roja at +250. But yeah, I would say Ellenberger probably just that slight bit more, a big fight experience against name opponents, and he'll be looking anyway to maintain that momentum. He'll be, I think, pretty determined here, and I don't think he'll be overlooking Roja. So I do like Ellenberger, but anything can happen, and with a undefeated submissions expert like Roja, I don't mind bets at +250.
There's a possible money to be made there. I mean, it's a submissions challenge, same as a puncher. Spike prelim card, first one of the year. We got Cowboy and Paul Kelly. Paul Kelly was one of those British fighters that benefits from being British. What do you think his chances going in there against Donald Cerrone?
Yeah, Paul Kelly, I think, he benefits from being British, several do, but not quite as much as Paul Taylor, a little lower down the card, has a losing UFC record. We'll maybe touch on that fight, or maybe we won't, against Gabe Rudiger there, but Kelly's got a few favorable matchups over the years, but maybe he's paying for it right now against Donald Cerrone. I think this is Cerrone's fight probably to lose. We can't be too sure with these WEC guys coming in, where they stack up exactly, and Paul Kelly probably feels like, he's been in the UFC and sort of is defending the good name of the UFC and its caliber of fighters, but I don't think that he has many answers for a fighter as aggressive and dynamic and with as much kind of finishing ability as Donald Cerrone. Now, Cerrone's still possibly vulnerable to submission, but that's never been known necessarily to be Kelly's forte per se. He's more probably of a stand-up guy, but maybe just sort of good at everything more than anything. So I don't think he's going to expose a giant hole in Cerrone's submissions defense. I don't think we're going to see it. I feel pretty confident. I feel pretty confident in both Donald Cerrone coming in here and maybe impressing some UFC fans who didn't get a chance to see all of his great WEC fights.
Starting off the Spike prelims, Michihiro Omagawa makes his UFC debut against Chad Mendes. This is really, I guess, with almost all of Mendes's fights, it's a clash of styles. The perennial wrestler going in there against Omagawa, how do you think Omagawa is going to fare in his stateside debut with the UFC?
Well, the oddsmakers have Omagawa as a very significant underdog, actually, more of an underdog, really, than Roja or Bader. And again, I'm not sure exactly where they're coming from on this. Now, I do understand Mendes is an excellent wrestler, and he's done a fair amount in his young career, undefeated. But who are his big wins exactly? Like, I mean, let's be honest for a second. Valencia is that who it was? I can't remember, but in any case, he hasn't really, or is it Javier Vasquez maybe? Yeah. Anyway, he hasn't really shown an ability to hang with the top guys. Whereas Michihiro Omagawa, he's been around at Japan. He's been fighting top quality competition. He's been winning just a great deal lately. And so I think he'll probably be able to show Mendes kind of a thing or two about top level competition. And I like him even to upset here. I don't know, Mendes, if he wins, it'll be, we've seen how Mendes wins. If he wins, he's going to take Omagawa down, pepper him with some shots and not do a whole heck of a lot else. But I do hope, maybe I hope too much, I hope and I think that Omagawa may just have the answers and may be able to pull this off for what will be a significant upset and maybe just a great UFC debut for a guy who has fallen under the radar, but he's really quite a top-ranked quality fighter, Omagawa, and I think he's going to get a much-deserved win here. We'll have to see. But
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm always curious to see how Japanese fighters adjust coming over stateside, particularly to the prevalence of wrestlers. And this is going to be a prime example of that, you know, having a guy go in there, Mendez, who's known for very dominant top control game. You know, maybe not necessarily always getting the finishes, but a very strong wrestler. Against Omagawa, who, like you said, has been on a tear, you know, beat Hatsuhiyoki, Takaya. You know, he's a very game fighter, and it's going to be really exciting to see what he's able to do here. I'm going to go with you. I'll go for the upset just because, you know, I'm a bit of a hater of the lay-and-pray wrestling, which I feel Mendez is a bit of a poster boy for. Yeah, I'm going to go with you and take the upset there. And the other Japanese fighter making his debut on the card, Kid Yamamoto, going in there against Demetrius Johnson. What do you think? Can Yamamoto pull this one off?
Yeah, so we're down below the Spike TV card now, and that is an excellent card. Cerrone, Kelly, that should be, you know,
cool,
dynamite.
But it will.
Regardless.
Hey.
But yeah, you go ahead. Let the people know if anyone doesn't already. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to run away with it. And I'm like, just today they said free on Facebook again. So anyone who wants to catch this fight, yeah, it'll be there on Facebook for you.
Yeah, I knew that was what you were going to say, and that is exciting news. I'm certainly going to check it out. A lot of people were upset that Kid Yamamoto's UFC debut would not be, you know, carried or available to watch, but now it will. So everybody relax. You can fire up your laptop sometime before, fire up your computer sometime before the 6 o'clock Spike TV card, and check that fight out on Facebook. I'm sure most of you are familiar with that website at this point in time. It's probably the most popular website in the world outside of Google. Yeah, and it is great news. I think that it'll be a tough fight. Demetrius Johnson, no one has ever, you know, said anything disparaging about his talents, but on the small side for the division, really could probably be fighting at 125 pounds, and Kid Yamamoto, you know, struggled a bit recently, but only against very quality fighters. The Joe Warren loss is not too far in the rear view, but again, they're a quality fighter. I know he defeated Bibiana Fernandez fairly recently, and you know, just he's been around, and I think that probably he'll pull this one off. But close fight, I think it should be pretty exciting while it lasts, and a good demonstration of what the 135-pounders are capable of.
Yep, and then unfortunately, most people won't be able to see it unless they come away or come across a way to see the unaired prelims. But Gabe Rudiger, Paul Taylor, my prediction, win or lose, both fighters cut.
Yeah, someone's definitely getting cut. I hope. I mean, if Paul Taylor were to lose, then they were to keep him around at what would then be 3 wins and 6 losses in the UFC would be a little ridiculous.
Ooh, damn.
With the roster spots that are needed, and Gabe Rudiger, the only reason he's here at all right now is because they called him up on short notice to fight Lauzon, and then he was, you know, summarily just destroyed by Lauzon, and they promised him this fight, and so he's getting it. But I would have to hope that the loser of this fight is getting cut. After that, we have what appears to be, you know, I don't want to say a tune-up fight for Mike Pierce. I'm not sure why Mike Pierce has been buried this low on the card, fighting, you know, a debuting guy in Kenny Robertson, who I don't know too much about. He's 10-0, appears to be decent with submissions. So, you know, you would expect Mike Pierce to come away with this one. You know, he's done a good deal so far. And then outside of that, a good little match with Kyle Kingsbury, that is, and Ricardo Romero. Again, another close fight. Two guys who've had their ups and downs, you know, in their young UFC careers, their short UFC careers. But probably they'll both stick around, I would think. And the winner, you know, we'll take that step up. So hopefully some of that will make the main cards. But we're getting, what are we getting? Eight out of the 11 fights. So that's not much to complain about, is it?
No. That's Never bad when you're getting that many, especially with the freebies. And it's nice how they're using Facebook again and using it, you know, so close after the first time. They employed it as a platform for delivering their content. And who knows, maybe even the day of the fight, like last time, they'll announce another fight for free on Facebook.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, kudos to them. As a fan, you're never going to complain about it. One interesting thing I thought, or a couple maybe we should touch on just before we say bid adieu for the week. People might want to check out on the MMACanada.net website, Armageddon Fighting Championship. They unveiled an interesting thing that's part of the Utherverse, I guess. It's the AFC virtual world for fans to check out events that they have on there. It's sort of like real life where you can watch fights. I'm not exactly clear on it. Josh, you're out there on the West Coast. You may have a little more insight into this for me.
No, it took me as much by surprise as I think just about everyone else. What we were waiting for from AFC were, you know, announcements on their two upcoming fight cards, one on either a Canadian coast, and still not a lot known about those cards. But what we got was this slightly puzzling development from Armageddon FC. There appears to be a website set up through the Utherverse.com interface. I assume that they probably you know, have various communities as part of this Utherverse where you do create an avatar, you kind of walk around and give yourself spiky hair or whatever you like, and I guess you can socialize with other AFC fans, and it appears that there will be showings of their cards, the cards that have already happened, the first four AFCs. The first one will be Armageddon FC 2, Aftershock, at noon on February 7th, and 4, also on February 4th. So you can definitely check that out. Go through the link on MMACanada.net. I'm not sure exactly how this all works. It appears you have to be there at just that one time or those specific times in order to watch the fights. I also understand it costs possibly 60 cents to watch them, or it says 5 rays at the door. So I don't know. I guess you purchase rays. So it's a bit of a pay site, but yeah, you can get the fights cheap and I guess watch them with your avatar friends. So that's something to look into if anyone out there is interested.
Yeah. GSP, The Striking Truth, that's also finally going to be premiering in Toronto on February 25th. Steve Wong, a really great filmmaker from Montreal, has been working on this, following him and David Lazo for filming them prep for their fights. It's going to be exciting to see this film come out now that it's finally going to get released, eh?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see sort of how people react to it at the film festivals that I'm sure it will play at. These won't all be MMA fans, we have to keep in mind. So this will be an insight into, you know, what a trainer does with a fighter, and, you know, just maybe inform some of these film buffs that the fighters, you know, they have a human side, obviously. But as far as my interest, I would definitely like to check it out. Don't think there'll be anything overly, you know, revelatory about either fighter. It'll probably be, you know, a lot of stuff we mostly know. But definitely the preview looks to be, you know, slickly produced. It looks to be quite a slick production. So, you know, I'll probably check it out if I ever get the chance. Will it be open to the public and sort of ongoing? Like,
I'm not sure,
for a couple weeks?
Well, we'll have to see what the distribution's like for it. But
mm-hmm.
I think they did shoot in HD,
mm-hmm.
so it'll definitely look great. And unfortunately, nothing going on in Canada this weekend for MMA. We got to wait till next weekend when we've got Ring Extreme happening in Quebec, although that'll be getting heavily shadowed by the Strike Force event taking place in New Jersey. I think all eyes in the MMA world will be glued to the Azad Center in East Rutherford for Fedor and Silva and Arlovski versus Karatonov in the start of the Strikeforce Heavyweight Tournament. Are you excited for that?
Oh, I certainly am. I think everyone gets excited when Fedor comes around. He's like a comet or something. It's like Fedor's comet. He just comes around like once a year or something. Everyone has to go out and take a look. I know I will be. But, I mean, obviously with the tournament, he'll be around a bit more. But in any case, yeah, that should be exciting. I'm sure we'll have previews next week all about it. Talk about that Ring Extreme card as well. I don't believe it's a sort of a major card even on the Canadian scene, but other fights coming up, obviously, Rumble in the Cage 42 and MSC 28, so we'll probably preview some of that as well next week, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I think we'll be touching on all those things as well as the fallout from 126. I'm sure we'll all be aghast in one way or another. All right, well, it was definitely a good chat with the Predator. Looking forward to seeing him fight, too, as well, when he comes back.
Yep, so long, Canada. Enjoy the fights. Enjoy the football. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.